is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Good Sunday morning to you. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley, hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Cubs get a win, so I think they have their fan base a little bit confused. The White Sox do what the White Sox have done all season long, and the Bears report to training camp this week. Brian, the baseball teams have gotten us close enough to football season where we can start to turn our attention to the Bears. We'll do that a little bit later today, but I do want to start with both our baseball teams in town because they have a big week ahead of them as the trading deadline will occur on, well, actually come and go on August 1st. So a lot to do here for both teams, and the question is, I think, with the Cubs, you know, Cody Bellinger is en fuego, my man, and he is doing everything he can to boost his value at the trade deadline. And I think the Cubs fans are probably wondering to themselves, hey, should we allow ourselves to maybe be fooled and dream on the possibility of making a run here?
Well, I think you know how I, you know, where I stand on this, because even though, God bless Jesse last week, told us the Cubs are going to wait right to the bitter end of the August 1 trade deadline, and they're in full legit wait mode. And we talked about last week, mm-hmm. I said, it's delusional on either side of town. It just is. I mean, you know, the Cubs can sit there and look, well, they're 6-4 in their last 10 and they won yesterday and great. And it's always good to beat the Cardinals, but you know, they're 6-back of the wild card. You know, the division theoretically is still there for the taking, but you need to be going 8-2 against these teams, not 6-4, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they can be in full wait mode, and Cody Bellinger, to my way of thinking, will be moved. And Marcus Stroman, not so good the last time out, but you know, I asked the question last week, what are you waiting for? I mean, he can get hurt, he can get bad in the last couple starts. And we can go into Marcus Stroman numbers and really what type of pitcher he is, and a ground ball pitcher and all that. And so what is his value with him opting out most likely at the end of the season? But if he gets hurt, whether with the Cubs or with, you know, now Tampa supposedly checking in on Marcus Stroman, then all of a sudden he just picks up that option, right? He doesn't test free agency. So a lot can happen between now and August 1st. That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
This whole idea that both teams, because of their respective divisions, are still in this thing. Again, the word is delusional.
Yes.
And they're not, and they won't be a playoff team. And I think it's clear to pretty much anyone who just doesn't bleed Cubby blue or, you know, silver and black. It's just time. It's time to start figuring out how you get better, and sooner better than later, and figure out what you're going to look like next year and moving forward.
Cody Bellinger played the role of hero on Friday. He did so again yesterday, driving in 4 runs. This is what it sounded like on Marquee yesterday.
Beautiful day here at the ballpark. A little muggy, Rossi said.
Oh, look at that! Yeah! Hoyer in to score, Hop to third. It's all going Belly's way right now, 3-2. All loaded up. Here comes. Base hit right field. Tuchman in. Porter on his heels. Headed to third is hit. Belly delivers again, and the Cubs have the lead. It's 7-6.
Curveball has him out in front. Hands stay back. He fights. Ultimately, he's able to pull this ball through the hole between first and second. Just spectacular work by Cody Bellinger. And the Cubs take the lead.
Does seem a too little too late, unfortunately, for the Cubs, because as you pointed out, they're 7.5 game back in the NL Central, and you know the wild card seems like a pipe dream as well.
Oh,
if anything,
absolutely.
It
yeah.
certainly feels like if they're going to do anything, it would be to somehow, some way, yeah, win the division and get there. Bellinger's been, you know, when he's been on the field, he had that obviously that injured list stint where he did hurt his knee, so he did miss, you know, about a month there. But he has been excellent when he's been on the field. He has now raised his OPS to .910, and Brian, I always like to go to OPS. If you're just picking one offensive stat, right, like that is a nice tidy number that will encapsulate a lot of your best players in the league. You just look at the OPS and you look at the OPS leaders across baseball, and Shohei Ohtani's first with 1065, Freddie Freeman's second, 993, Acuna's 986 third, Betts is 950, Olson is 940, Juan Soto is 928, and then Cody Bellinger, who doesn't quite qualify because of the at-bats, but if he stays healthy, he will at the end of the season, is seventh in baseball with an OPS of 910. He's been, you know, more than the Cubs ever could have dreamed
Absolutely.
He would be. You know, he's figured it out, and he's a strange case, too, because, you know, I know Cap was saying, hey, you know, figure it out, get a deal done. But as a Scott Boras client, we know this was always the plan for what they wanted to do. They signed a one-year deal in a place they thought they could have some success, and he's clearly followed through and done it. And as a left-handed hitter, you know, a middle-of-the-order left-handed hitter who can play gold glove caliber center field but also has the flexibility to play first base when you need him to, he's going to be extraordinarily valuable on the free agent market. And, you know, I don't even know what number – If the Cubs had the appetite to do so, I don't know what number at what, you know, at how many years would be palatable for Scott Boras and Cody Bellinger to sign up for, because Brandon Nimmo signed an 8-year, $162 million contract this previous offseason, plays center field, and, you know, his highs have never been anywhere near what Cody Bellinger has done. And even Brandon Nimmo's best season hasn't been as good as this season for Cody Bellinger. So the starting point for me is 8 years, $163 million. If I'm Scott Boras and I'm advising Cody Bellinger, and I don't know if I'm a team getting, you know, who says I want to sign up with Cody Bellinger for a long-term deal, I do have some reservations about what wrong in between his MVP season and this year, right? Like, so I don't know if even he's proven this year that he seems to have figured it out, but what convinces you that he should be the guy that you lock up so much money to? We just lived the Jason Hayward experience here in the city.
Yeah, I don't, the Cubs, I think it's fantasy baseball if you think that they're going to pony up, and they're not even talking to Stroman about extension. Mm-hmm. They rarely talk to anyone during the season. Ian Happ got the job done, but with those numbers you're just putting out there, and they're legit. I mean, if I'm a baseball executive and this is a prove it year for him, and he's more than proving it, and you mentioned left-handed power, yeah. I mean, that just isn't, you don't find that on the street.
It's the hardest thing, to, you know, obviously pitching, right. Of course, but like when you're looking for, filling out your lineup, middle of the order left-handed pop is probably the, yeah. Who can also hit left-handers?
Well, I mean, it's unbelievable. But all that said, mm-hmm. I would be 8 years. I would be very leery. I'd be looking about half of that if I had to juice the money a little yeah. bit. First of all, you know, they're going to want the player opt out 2 years into whatever, if it's a 4, 5, 6, 8 year contract, right?
Yep.
Scott Boras is going to want the player to have the flexibility because that's just the way it's done these days. But I couldn't tie him up to 8 years because of the injuries, because of, like you said, what happened in those 2 years. It's great that it's all come together for him and the Cubs to this point, but the Cubs still find themselves with about a 10% chance to win the division, even though the division isn't all that. So I would be very leery to be talking 8 years and 175 or whatever the numbers are. I'd be looking about half the years and Scott Boras probably wouldn't want to have that conversation.
Yeah, so, you know, that's where the Cubs currently sit with him, and it's just a situation where, you know, if you want to talk about the idea of, you know, signing him up long term, it just, you're not living in reality, because again, I don't think it's a great move for the team who's going to lock him up too, because there is some uncertainty surrounding him. But yeah, Scott Boras, he's the best agent in baseball for a reason. He usually gets his clients somewhere close to what they're looking for, and it's always, you know, advantageous to them. As you mentioned, those opt-outs, you know, you see it, you know, across baseball, you know, I know Boras is not his agent, but Manny Machado, you know, just showed you in San Diego exactly, you know, how you play that to your full advantage. And then you sign one $300 million deal, and then you opt out 4 or 5 years later and lock yourself up into another $300 million deal. And, you know, you laugh all the way to the bank. Meanwhile, you know, if you're the Cubs and you're looking at this, you're saying, okay, well, we're 7.5 out. Yeah, we've got the best run differential in baseball, but it's too little too late at this point. You said, you know, you needed to go 8-2 this week. And even then, everything is, it's delusional, right? Like, if they had gone 8-2, which is just, you know, two more wins this previous week, well, ultimately, isn't it foolish to say, okay, it took us this long to get to this point? Sure, maybe they've had some poor luck, you know, in these one-run games, and that's part of the reason why. But part of the reason why they, you know, I think they've struggled in one-run games, not just the bullpen, Bri, but also the fact that, hey, when you lack power across your lineup, you don't have an opportunity to win some of those laughers, you know? So you're more susceptible in those close games because you don't have a lineup full of, you know, big boppers who can actually go out and make things easy on you. So the Cubs, the way their lineup is constructed, you know, they're a good baseball team, I think, fundamentally, and they do a lot of things that you like. But the reality is they're still missing, you know, some of those core middle-of-the-order hitters, I think, that you need to build around that if you're going to truly be successful in baseball.
Well, the numbers show that they have the best shortstop play, I think, certainly in National League, if not all of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with Dansby Swanson coming back, you know, David Ross mentioned yesterday, it just lengthens the lineup, which is great. And you alluded to it. I mean, they're the only team in the division with a positive run differential, and it's plus 36. So it's not Atlanta's plus 146,
yeah.
But it is, you know, it is the outlier in this division because everyone else has a negative number. And that's why the Cubs should be sitting at 53-45 expected wins and losses versus 47-51. But at home, they're 26-26. Away from Wrigley, they're a sub 500 team, 21-25. And against teams with winning records, 25-39. So even if you win the division, where are you going? You can't beat good teams. You're not even close, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just been a weird up and down year, streaky, you know, positive streaks, losing streaks, and it they can be entertaining. They can have a game like yesterday where they're just getting in the box and putting the barrel on the ball and going, and it's fun. And so, again, beating the Cardinals and you know. You can enjoy that for the day or a series or whatever, but realistically, where are you going here? So either side of town, we talked to Jesse. I'm like, why are you waiting? And last week I said, Dylan Cease, you know, I suppose is an untouchable, but the way things are going for the White Sox, I don't think anyone should be untouchable. I just don't. I think you answer every call with an open mind, and given the heavy lifting you have to do in particular with the White Sox, I can't sit here and say, well, Luis Robert and Dylan Cease don't even, you know, mention them to me. I, you know, move on. Let's start a different conversation. Why not? Why not? Why not hear what people have to ask and say, because you're now at season lows and you know, in terms of where you are in the division and what you're wins and losses are. It's, and here we are a week away from the trade deadline.
Don't worry. We've got plenty of time to roll up our sleeves and talk Sox here coming up. The Cubs conclude their series against the St. Louis Cardinals here today before they go ahead and square off against the White Sox in the Crosstown Classic, the two-game affair. That gets going on Tuesday, but the Cubs will wrap up their series against the Cardinals today with Jameson Taillon on the mound. And we'll see if they continue to have those delusions of grandeur and a possible National League Central title if they somehow, some way win today, what they'll actually do. I think Jed Hoyer knows that in all reality, this team is not really good enough in likely to compete in the playoffs. So I think if anything, Jed's probably looking at this situation and saying, boy, you know, if he was being honest, Bri, I think it'd probably be easier for the Cubs to lose a couple here ahead of the trade deadline so he doesn't have to, after, you know, they make whatever trades they make and have to explain away why, you know, they traded Cody Bellinger and Marcus Stroman at the deadline when they were, quote, still in it, right? Like, I think it would make his public conversation easier.
Well, I give Cub fans, I know people laugh at Cub fans, and as long as the beer is cold and the sunshine is warm and everything, I give more credit for that than that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you have to lose a couple more to explain. Anyone who's looking at this and is a baseball fan and a realist knows where this team is and what its possibilities are. And to me, that's not even, you don't have to sugarcoat anything. It's just, this is what it is, and you're sellers. You were sellers 2 weeks ago. You're certainly sellers today, and I expect you to be sellers August 1, no matter what happens between now and then.
Yeah, it would certainly be surprising if they're not. 312-332-3776 if you want to jump in, talk some Cubs with us. We'll also turn our attention to the South Side. The Southsiders were in Minnesota last night. They lost 3-2, and Lucas Giolito was interviewing with Jason Benetti on Fox and Eric Karros yesterday in game. Did he do his teammate dirty yesterday? I'll let you hear and you decide next.
If you miss something, get the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. This is ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports.
Yeah. Well. I'm too sexy for this girl. Too sexy for your girl.
Miller and Hanley with you till 11 o'clock here on ESPN 1000. And while things were good on the north side yesterday for the Cubs as they beat the Cardinals 8-6, there is, I don't think anybody can be delusional about the White Sox. Another loss to the Twins yesterday. They lost 3-2 last night. And we'll get to, although, you know what, I say that, Bri, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself because it sounds like maybe Pedro Grifol is still delusional. We'll get into that in a moment here, but first I have to ask you. So Lucas Giolito did the in-game interview on Fox last night. Jason Benetti and Eric Karros were on the call, and I found it interesting because on one hand I'm thinking to myself, all right, well, this certainly could be Lucas's last, you know, public interview as a member of the White Sox. Now, I'm not saying it is, but it certainly could be because obviously he's going to be, he should be the first guy the White Sox are looking to deal because he should have the most value. But I was wondering, you know, did he do his current teammate dirty in Luis Robert? He was asked by Eric Karros, how do you approach pitching to one of the best hitters in baseball? And he spilled the beans, Bri.
So we're talking about your teammates now. How would you attack Luis Robert Jr. if you had to pitch against him? How do you go after him?
Ooh, that's a tough one. A lot of high fastballs. Trying to make a lot of pitches look like strikes that aren't strikes. Because Lou has, like, power all through the zone. So, you know, you could throw him. Very nice. There's that good slider. So you could throw him a really good, like, in-zone breaking ball, like, to the bottom corner away, and he'll still go reach out and hit it for a home run. I've seen that multiple times this year. So for him, it's all about, you got to move the ball around and make a lot of balls look like strikes so he swings at them.
If you heard, he started it with a lot of high fastballs, and sure enough, how did the game end? Well, Minnesota Twins closer Johan Duran with a 103-mile-per-hour heater up in the zone.
On 1-2. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Minnesota clings to a win over the White Sox and takes the series with a chance for a sweep tomorrow.
Yeah, the White Sox.
So there you go. White Sox lose 3-2 last night. Luis Robert with an opportunity to maybe do some damage and try and tie the game there, but was unable to. Did Lucas Giolito, though, break the code there of basically giving the full scouting report on how to get his teammate hitter out?
Well, I mean, kudos to Eric Karros asking a question that got a pretty good answer for an in-game interview. Usually you don't get anything of substance, right? And Lucas Giolito really is, by everyone who covers the team, you know, guys on the beat love talking to Lucas Giolito because he's a very thoughtful baseball player and analytical and, you know, knows what he's looking at. I would hope that on the major league level, especially with the division-leading Twins,
yes,
their advanced scouts have that idea that high heat would be the way to go. But to Lucas's point, I mean, Luis Robert Jr., he hits mistakes, and he can hit them far and hit them hard. But yeah, it was interesting, and that was interesting that came into play for the final out of the game.
Yeah, no, and obviously that's tongue-in-cheek because you're right. Like, the Twins have advanced scouts, and they know exactly. They have a plan of attack for Luis Robert, who's been by far and away the White Sox best hitter all season. So that should go without saying. But so that was certainly tongue-in-cheek on my part. But you do wonder, like, honest to a fault in some ways for Lucas Giolito there, because like you could easily just go with, you know what, man, I don't know how you get him out. He's so good as a teammate. You know what I mean? Like it's you just throw that out there. It's an easy answer.
It's why Bull Durham, you know, here are the cliches. Here, you know, memorize these. You know?
Yes, yes.
Baseball, usually baseball managers and veteran players, I mean, they don't want anything to do with actually answering a question that would have some substance to it.
Yeah, so I love Lucas Giolito. I'm going to be sad to see him go. I do expect him to go because it doesn't make any sense. Just as we were talking about Cody Bellinger last segment, it doesn't make any sense for the White Sox to hold on to him when they don't, you know, they don't have him signed to a long-term contract, even though it seems like he was more than willing to try and get a deal done. This has been the White Sox MO for, going back to basically since Jerry Reinsdorf took over ownership of the team, right? Like they do not sign pitchers to big money, long-term deals.
When I covered them in the 90s full-time, they didn't want to go more than 3 years. I've told the story before that when Greg Maddux was a free agent and the Yankees were, and Gene Michael was driving him around Long Island.
Yeah, Stick Michael. I love that nickname.
Yeah, Stick. He was driving Greg Maddux up along Long Island, trying to find him a nice palatial palace to live with when he was going to wear Yankee pinstripes. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta had a 5-year. I'm trying to remember what it was. It
like
was
35 or something. I don't know.
$45 million, maybe something like that. And Ron Shuler, bless him, as he was lighting up his in between cigarettes down when we were the winter meetings in Louisville. And we were talking about free agency, and he said, well, you know, we're in on Maddux. And I'm like, what? Mm-hmm. He's we're in on Greg Maddux. And I'm like, well, you know, what do you mean? Because at that point, they weren't given more than three-year deals. And both the Yankees and the Braves had five-year substantial deals for the time on the table already. And I'm like, well, you're not in on Maddux because, again, three years, not as good as 5 years.
No.
It's just – but that's how long and how far back the White Sox philosophy, and sometimes it pays off. And it was about as much about injury as it was about, you know, financial guaranteed money. It was just like they didn't believe that you tie up pitchers in particular that long because chances are that pitchers could get hurt and maybe even career-ending injuries. So, and one thing about Greg Maddux, when I was covering the Cubs and he was with the Cubs, going back to Lucas Giolito, you know, knowing what he's looking at, even when it's teammates and how you would approach pitching to a guy like Luis Robert. The smart young pitchers with the Cubs would sit next to Greg Maddux the day he was charting pitches before one of his starts, and they would just pick his brain watch him. I mean, if you had a brain cell working, you want to be sitting next to that guy and asking him questions while he was charting pitches to get ready in preparation for a start the following game. That's how you know, when you have assets like that and leaders like that and veterans like that in your clubhouse, you'd be really smart to utilize and you know, clean as much as you can from them before they move on.
The Braves inked Greg Maddux to a 5-year, $28 million deal, and he went on to win the next three Cy Young Awards. And, of course, the Braves won their lone championship in the 90s with Greg Maddux in 1995. The White Sox did learn their lesson, though, because a couple years later, they inked Jamie Navarro to a 4-year deal, Bri. So.
See, you don't want to break that rule. Sometimes you break the rule and it doesn't do you well.
Yeah, so Lucas Giolito, in all likelihood, will be dealt at the deadline. Would be really surprised if he's not.
See, break the rule for Greg Maddux. Don't break it for Jamie Navarro.
Yes, exactly.
That's what you would learn then.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so Pedro Grifol, though, did have some interesting comments. And I, you know, said maybe he is delusional because, you know, we can squint and kind of, again, you and I don't think they should, but you can squint and kind of see, like, how if you're the Cubs, you would talk yourself into trying to make a run at it if you wanted to be very bold and you wanted to cling
to the... if I was making a beer cup snake in the bleachers, maybe I would squint and talk myself into it, but no.
But... if I'm the White Sox, I can't even I'm blind. I cannot find a way where I can talk myself into them being in contention. They're now 11 games back. The last two games have cemented it in again, I came in saying on Friday night you had to sweep the Twins and even that didn't do anything, but that was the only way you could make a plausible argument to stay in this. But interestingly enough, Eloy Jimenez, who has been all season long, right? He's been out, you know, out there, you know, at different points throughout the season playing right field. That has been an ongoing discussion about how much he should be playing the field. He clearly, you know, looks like he has been, you know, hampered with the leg issue that he's been dealing with. He was the DH last night, but he was, you know, he's been not running as hard as, you know, it seems like we're back to the Tony La Russa era, right?
Where the do not run list.
Yes, exactly. Now, Pedro Grifol was asked in the post-game press conference last night after the game about Eloy Jimenez just looking like, you know, he can't move the way you would expect him to. And this was Pedro Grifol's comments. Quote, "I'm glad you mentioned that because he's not running down the line, and I choose to put him in there with that kind of effort down the line. I want his bat over his legs. I want to make sure I get that out there clearly for everybody. I chose his bat over his legs. That's all he can give us. I'll continue to monitor that. And if I think it becomes a problem for us where he's going to get hurt or compromise us in any way running the bases, then I'll make a change. But for right now, I'm choosing his bat over his legs." And then follow-up question. So day off tomorrow, of course, being today, Sunday, Pedro Grifol. "I'm not giving him a day tomorrow. He's playing tomorrow. We've got to win that ball game tomorrow." That's Pedro Grifol for your 11-59 Chicago White Sox, who take on the 52-48 Minnesota Twins today, 11 games back, just a week or so ahead of the trade deadline. Your thoughts, Brian?
Must win today, 41-59. Must win today because you're still in this thing. We saw Luis Robert earlier in the season with the lack of effort down first base, and he was still nursing an injury, and Pedro Grifol was either not aware of it, and, you know, he talked about lack of effort, and people were booing, and it goes back, like you just said, to La Russa, when I never have heard of a do not run list. You know, it's not do not resuscitate, it's do not run. And he explained, well, on a routine grounder, and again, routine grounders turn into errors sometime.
Sure.
I understand the bat over the legs, but he wants to get it out there because he doesn't want anyone saying, well, why isn't Eloy busting his tail down to first trying to beat out a ground ball, right? Mm-hmm. Because let's get it out there. I don't want him further injuring himself. And yet, I mean, we don't have a lineup yet.
Not yet. We know Eloy's in, though.
Okay. If I was Rick Hahn, I might have a, you know, conversation with Pedro about whether he's in or not, because it's not a must-win game. And it's a groin injury, and he's had other injuries. I would – and if he's truly on the four guys who are in the no-trade list, then you need to preserve Eloy's baseball future and everything else. And I think it's much more in everyone's interest to get him healthy and 100% as soon as you can. And today is not must win. You don't need his bat or his legs. You do the right thing and the prudent thing, and you take care of the player, and he'd be sitting in the dugout or the clubhouse getting treatment if I was running the show, but I'm not. So there you go.
Yeah. It just goes to show, though, how compromised they are from a roster construction point. You know, this has been an ongoing discussion all season long. You know, Eloy. Yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, I love when his bat's in the lineup. Honestly, the problem is he shouldn't be playing as much right field as he's been playing all year. This just goes back to what you and I were talking about this, you know, in March when Eloy was talking about, you know, wanting to come in and play right field, and, you know, how he was in the, you know, in great shape and lost all this weight. And that's fine and dandy, but the reality is he's proven to them he cannot stay healthy when he's playing the field. And so the sooner that the White Sox come to the realization that he's a designated hitter, fine. You want to play him in right field once a week, maybe? Maybe I can have, you know, a conversation about that where you can get other guys the occasional DH. But unfortunately, Eloy Jimenez cannot stay healthy. He's proven it time and time again. And at this point, we're moving to the stage of his career where he doesn't even have young legs anymore. He's in the prime of his career. The legs are going to start to get shot as you get older, and you're going to have to manage those to begin with. So I don't know. It's been an ongoing problem that started back in March or February when he was talking about playing the outfield and the White Sox were open to that idea. They have put themselves in a spot now where Pedro Grifol needs to defend him playing in a game that, you know, it was must win 20 games ago, not must win on Sunday, July 23rd.
If it must win, as we sit here on this Sunday, with the Fangraphs playoff possibility, probability, can you take a stab at what it might be?
For the White Sox?
Yeah.
I haven't looked
it's
recently.
It's not a Blutarski. It's not 0.0.
I'm going to say 0.6.
Very well done. 0.5.
Okay.
And I believe there are four teams with the Blutarski, the 0.0. And we know, you know, the Kansas Cities and Oaklands of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But 0.5, I don't like your odds.
Yeah.
I if it was a 50% chance, maybe this is must win. So if you want to, you know, invert those two numbers and get rid of the decimal, I'm with you. 0.5, a 41-59, 18 games under, 11 games out of this so-called winnable division, and you have three teams you'd have to leapfrog. Go get them.
0.6. Not great, Bri. Not great. 312-332-3776. If you want to chime in, talk a little bit of baseball with us, we'll also turn our attention to the Bears as well as they report on Tuesday. Got some Justin Fields conversation coming your way. We've also got Kevin Warren puts under the microscope. Long, extensive profile done by Dan Weider in the Chicago Tribune. And love Dan's deep dives. Always does a great job. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Give us a call, 312-332-3776. Mellor and Hanley on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Do da dippity. You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that. I think you can get with this, because this is kind of fat.
Jeff Mallett, Brian Hanley, hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today. White Sox pregame coverage starts at 12:30. Ahead of a 1:10 first pitch, White Sox and Twins, your home for White Sox baseball here on ESPN 1000. Also your home for the Chicago Bears starting this season. So your first Bears action as the Bears reports to camp on Tuesday. First practice is 10 o'clock on Wednesday. That's a closed practice, so the public cannot go and see that one. But that will be the first practice of the year. Bri, before we get to the Bears, I'd like to take a call on the White Sox here. Owen is in Willowbrook, wants to chime in. What's going on, Owen? You're on with Mellor and Hanley.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I don't understand why Jimenez would be on the no-trade list. You know, the guy plays less than 100 games a year. He's always hurt. You guys just said he can't give an effort. He really doesn't have a position to play. I'm tired of seeing first and second baseman playing right field. I think the only three guys that should be on that no-trade list are Cease, Roberts, and I do like the Benedetti. I think the guy actually does not epitomize what the Sox are. He makes contacts. He plays defense. He's consistent day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
Those three guys would be on my no-trade list. And then the last comment is I don't trust Han as far as making trades. You got to do it. But I'm just hoping that he can find a general manager that thinks like Han does. Because I always go back to Tatis for Shields. I mean, yeah. Lynn looks like he can't really bring you much. But, you know, if you look at the Shields trade, 2 games before Shields got traded to the Sox.
Yes, 11, right? Was it 11 in runs?
He gave up a ton of runs. The owner blasted him, and what does Han do?
Uh-huh.
He trades Tatis for Shields.
No,
this guy has been the worst thing for the Sox since the day he started as GM. And I think he might be the worst GM in all of sports.
Good call, Owen. Great recall, too. Okay. You know, and Bri, he brings up the reason that Tatis trade drives me crazy whenever I go back to it. Forget the fact that Fernando Tatis has turned into, you know, an MVP caliber player. Let's set aside, obviously, the PED suspension. But when the White Sox made the move to add James Shields, they weren't in real contention to begin with, right? And you didn't quite know what you had in Fernando Tatis, but obviously you were giving up a lottery ticket for a pitcher who, as Owen pointed out, had just gotten drubbed in his Shields' worst start ever. The White Sox needed somebody to eat some innings that season, and they went ahead. And I can't remember. I'll have to go back and look at Baseball Reference to find exactly how many games out they were. But they really weren't real contenders at that moment, and they end up every once in a while, if you give up that lottery ticket and then that lottery ticket hits, you look foolish. And, you know, that's the problem was what they were trading for at the time wasn't worth what they were giving up. The lottery ticket was still worth keeping on the roster, especially when, and, you know, I say lottery ticket, but the reality was they didn't know exactly what they had in Fernando Tatis Jr., but they clearly saw something when they signed him, right, to an international deal. And they never really, it's been the White Sox, you know, their Achilles heel now for the last 15 years or so, their inability to scout and develop players.
Well, if there was ever any more of a misnomer than Big Game James, what the Sox version, that didn't turn out. But to be fair,
mm-hmm.
and Owen's right. I mean, I Eloy Jimenez wouldn't be on my no trade list, but it's a moot point given his injuries at this point, right?
I mean,
I don't know what, if you did move him or had an inkling to move him, what would you be getting for a guy who's been mostly in and out of the lineup the last couple of years and really is a DH? I wouldn't put him on, but the reports are there are four guys on that list. To be fair, though, Rick Hahn turned Jose Quintana into Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez, who are two of the four on the no trade list, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every GM has the ones they wish they had never done. See Ryan Pace and Mitch Trubisky. Whether it's drafting or trading, and most GMs have at least a few in the win column that are like, Dylan Cease was the throw-in in that deal, right? It was everyone's like, you're giving up one of your top prospects in Eloy Jimenez for Jose Quintana. And by the way, the White Sox said, wanted Dylan Cease, and Theo and Jed said, okay, sure. And how'd that work out on the north side? So, to be fair,
sure.
they're the glaring mistakes, and there's also the ones where they just absolutely are laughing all the way back to the bank because of the haul they got.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like, you do this long enough, and you're going to have those ones that you deeply regret. That's one of those trades where it was, I admit that, right? Like, I'm okay. I understand that you do this job long enough and you will eventually have some trades that you just, that's the name of the game. That is part of the gig. But that one was, the process was wrong, in my opinion, right? Like,
sure.
You don't, well, like,
no,
that's where.
Absolutely valid. Absolutely valid.
Yeah. And so that's where it kind of drives you crazy. I'll be curious to see. If I have to imagine they're going to do everything they can to offload Lance Lynn, who has been decimated by left-handed hitters all season long. I don't know, honestly, what you're going to get for him. I think their best move might be, it seems like the Reds are a team that's been rumored because they've clearly put together an exciting young lineup full of hitters, but they don't have much pitching to help complement that, so they're easily a match. And it would seem like, if the Reds are serious and they want to, try and trade for someone like Lucas Giolito, well, I would think package Lance Lynn up with Lucas Giolito to a team like the Reds, who probably can use every arm they could get, and maybe get that extra bump in prospect, because Lance Lynn's not going to bring, much back on his own.
No, and look, and some of the underlying numbers. Certainly the four home runs the other day didn't help, but we talked about last week, St. Louis was mentioned that, they wouldn't mind his veteran leadership.
Take him.
Yeah, right. But I'm with you. If you package him, you might get a little something as a sweetener. The fact of the matter is, this week, MLB.com did their five under the radar type deadline deals.
Mm-hmm.
And Lance Lynn, two of the five were White Sox players. Lance Lynn was one of them. I don't know how much under the radar we've been talking about for weeks.
Yep.
That, with the team option of $18 million next year.
He's under the radar because his ERA's over six, So nobody's really like, oh, give me Lance Lynn.
And the first inning numbers, he's the worst pitcher in baseball in the first inning. I mean, if you get out of the first inning with only, instead of four or five runs, only a couple, you got something going.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some other, second tier numbers that at least argue he's still got something left. And he might be one of those guys, too, that the old quote unquote change of scenery, all of a sudden the old war horse, the old veteran racehorse gets a sniff of the finish line with a playoff team. Maybe he figures it out again. But that said, Joe Kelly was the other guy on the list,
mm-hmm.
and he's coming off. He's off the injured list now, and there are enough.
Let him throw one inning, Bry, and then ship him out of town so he doesn't re-injure himself.
Seriously, but there will be teams that look at his advanced statistics and say there's something there too.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not earth-shaking returns by any stretch of imagination, but something, right? Something. So. Again, that's why I could make the case that you want to do something substantial beyond Lucas Giolito. I'm, and I know people are going to go crazy. Dylan Cease Everyone could be part of a conversation. It doesn't hurt to listen. I can't go in to August or get closer to August 1st with this. I don't talk about these guys. What does it hurt to listen until someone, you know, blows you away with a deal and off you go. You've got a lot of heavy lifting here. I mean, this is no longer just a small sample size. This is last year and this year, and this year is supposed to be better, and it's actually worse.
Back to Lance Lynn for a moment. I think he might be somebody who, at this stage of his career, would really benefit from a team that would employ a left-handed opener, right? Like, because that's the one thing I'm telling you. Like you look at the splits, and he can get right-handers out at a high rate. I think what you need to do if you're a team who actually did, like, there could be some value there if you're open to the idea of, all right, we're going to throw, you know, a lefty opener out there who might go an inning or two, make you set your lineup against him, and then we're bringing Lance in. And now, listen, that would require some buy-in from Lance Lynn, and obviously his personality would not lead you to believe he's, you know, someone who would be like, okay, I'm not going to be a starting pitcher. But, like, so it would certainly require perhaps a leap of faith in this instance. But if you look at the numbers, like, he can get right-handers out all day long, Bri. It's the left-handers that have absolutely just demolished him. And so, like a forward-thinking team could, like, you know, say, hey, maybe the Rays, you know what I mean? The Rays clearly need pitching help because they've been decimated by injury. Maybe they'd say, hey, Lance, come on over, try and help us, you know, win our first World Series in the organization's history. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to send a lefty out there. The lineup's going to be set. And now you're going to be, you know, set up for the best possible success going forward. So I do think there could be a little bit of value there. 312-332-3776. We could address Cease, and also plenty of Bears conversation coming your way as well in the 10 o'clock hour as they report to training camp on Tuesday. He's Hanley. I'm Meller. This is the
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
You mentioned, Bri, that the White Sox should be open to any conversation regarding trading players. Dylan Cease, of course, their probably most valuable asset. Of course, I say that, I would think the pitching over Luis Robert would be, but nevertheless, you know, you should always be at least open to the conversation. In fact, there, you know, I think anybody would tell you if you're in professional sports, there's literally nobody who is untradeable. Like, it just, you know,
Babe Ruth got traded.
Exactly.
That's always, you know, that's always the, you know, default. I'm not saying you're the likelihood
correct
that you would get an offer that would wow you is probably very minimal, even with Dylan Cease.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone did, then I'm all ears. But I know that Rick Hahn probably can't afford the PR hit that would take, because it would take years to figure out what you did get in return for Dylan Cease and whether it was a good move or not. So it's not going to happen. But I hate this, a team that's 18 games under today and as far as 11 out of a bad division, arguably the worst division in baseball, that you would have untouchables. You just can't. I mean, but that doesn't mean I'm out there shopping him and making the call saying, hey, you know, I got a pretty good guy here, pretty young, under control. What are you here from? I'm not doing that. It's not going to happen, but I just, given where the White Sox find themselves, they're no untouchables in my world. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. If anything, the conversation might open the door to a possibility in December at the winter meetings. Like, that seems to be, like, if you're really going to trade Dylan Cease, that would seem the most likely time that they would make it happen, because you want to open up the Dylan Cease sweepstakes to every team in baseball. You wouldn't want to,
not just contending teams.
Because he would immediately be one of the, you know, most sought after players available on the trade market. So but you're right. Like, have those conversations now. Maybe lay a little bit of groundwork and see how valued he would be at this time. And then again, like, you can look back and say, okay, well, when they made the Chris Sale deal, when they made the Adam Eaton deal, when they got back, you know, what at the time were believed to be, you know, a good return, they did so at the GM meetings in December, because, again, every team was kind of in on it at that point. I think that would be the time when the White Sox would move Dylan Cease. But again, that would mean he's not untradeable or untouchable.
Well, and look, again, with the PR hit, nothing's a secret anymore, right? So even if Rickon had exploratory conversations with other GMs, other teams.
That's true.
Building, if that got out now, one, you know, you'd have issues with Dylan Cease most likely, but you certainly would have.
Would Dylan Cease really be offended or would he, you know?
Well, I mean, it depends, you know, if he's just a bottom line guy and knows what, you know, how baseball works,
yeah.
He might not be. And for all I know, he might actually like the idea of going to a team that seems like it can contend for something this year and moving on. But Rickon couldn't afford it for that week.
No.
And everything leaks right now. So there's not, it's not happening. But again, like Owen said, how's Eloy Jimenez reportedly on the, it's a moot point with his physical condition, his injuries. But when you're in this situation that the White Sox find themselves in and put themselves in, I don't have a list of untouchables. I just don't.
Yeah. Yeah. If anything, you know, I don't think Eloy's untouchable. He's probably untradeable because his value has hit probably an all-time low as a player in this league. And you would want, you know, to give him the opportunity to build his value back up, especially when you have him under contract and he is a middle of the order hitter. If anything, you go back to spring training next year, you let Eloy DH, and then you let him put together a somewhat healthy season where he has consistent at bats, and then you see what kind of numbers he can provide. And then all of a sudden next season at the trade deadline, you can say, okay, he's built his value back up again. But right now it's just a spot where it doesn't make any sense for the White Sox, I think, to trade Eloy. Because
world, he's helping you win something.
Yes,
next year.
Of course. Yeah, but at this point, though, I don't think anybody's going to bully you over with an offer for Eloy that would make it, you know, sensible for you as an organization to deal him. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, lots of Bears conversation coming your way. A little bit of NFL as well. I'd like to talk about the running back position and the stir that it has been created across the league amongst the elite players. Apparently, I guess they had a Zoom call meeting last night, Bri, amongst 10 or so of the elite running backs in the league to try and have a conversation about what they do.
What the hell happened to our position?
To get paid? Value? Yeah, I'd like to talk about that. So we'll.
And you mentioned the Dan Weider extensive deep dive into Kevin Warren, a terrific read in Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you learned is that the first order of business for the new president of the team is to interview every single employee, full or part-time, within the organization, within Hallis Hall. And he has a three-question interview that he provides the questions beforehand for each employee. So they come in, they're a lot of time. He wants answers to minimum those three questions. And they're interesting questions, and maybe we could have our listeners answer some of those questions. And won't limit it to the Bears, because there are a lot of teams in town that need some help.
We will do that. We'll dive into the extensive piece by Dan Weider on Kevin Warren, the Bears team president, the new team president, and the three questions he has been asking every employee of the team. We'll share those with you next in 2 short minutes on ESPN 1000.